This ministry is supported by the members and friends of First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. If you would like to support future podcasts, go to www.ucdsm.org to make your contribution.
When people learned that we spent our Christmas holidays last year in New York City with my brother's family, their first question is always, "Did you see Hamilton?" When we respond yes, the next question, usually said with a sense of utter incredulity, is, "How did you get tickets?" Lucky for us, we had friends who had seen the show when it was still off Broadway and said that it was a must-see. So we got our tickets before it became the must-see for the rest of the country. Hamilton seemed the perfect show for our group of various ages and interests that we brought together for the holidays. We started our biannual holiday trip tradition as a way of keeping our crew of 20-somethings interested in spending time with their aged parents. Since our three kids have added significant others, we have a very mixed group. Beyond the differences of age, race, and gender, for New York, we had the theater junkies in my family, my son's girlfriend, the dancer, my niece's boyfriend, the basketball player, the other niece's fiance, the kindergarten teaching history buff, my brother, whose major concern regarding theater tickets is that they just not cost too much, and those for whom rap is their second language, and those of us who honestly have never quite gotten it. On the last day in the city, we went around the breakfast table voting on our favorite thing of the trip. And while the ferry ride through the fog where you couldn't even see Liberty Island, and then to stand there in front of the Statue of Liberty and watch the fog unveil her before our eyes, well, that was a leading contender for many of us. For everyone, Hamilton proved to be the favorite. It proved to be this crystallizing moment of emotional connection, both to this country and to the journey that it continues to embark on, as well as an often tragic reminder that democracy is an all-too-human adventure. Buoyed by that human capacity for hope and creativity and idealism, and at the same time fraught with the human capacity for greed, stupidity, and fear. Now, adding to this for me was that the night before this final morning, we'd spent at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church's Christmas Eve service. And as I sat there, I couldn't help but reflect upon the connection between Hamilton's story and the story of our faith. Just as this new nation was undergoing the difficult process of coming into reality, so too were those who would define Unitarianism advocating for a radically different way of understanding religion. Just as the play demonstrated that the founders of the creation of democracy, that it was a messy yet ever earth-changing feat, so too has a continued struggle for this faith we've sought in each age to recreate the meaning of religion. And as we enter the 21st century, this tradition of ours offers a way of understanding religion and a way of living our lives that not only offers a great deal of hope in too often troubling times, but has a great appeal to many who are struggling with the relevance of religion in general. That's why I wanted us to hear the Good Samaritan story this morning, to help us remember and reflect upon what was the center of the faith of those who founded our traditions. Yes, they were Congregationalist Christians predominantly, but their focus was not nearly so much on the life eternal, but as living the life well that we live now. For them, living well meant taking that admonition to do unto others as you would have them do to you as their creed. The life and teachings of Jesus were not about trust and obey to gain a seat in heaven, but about being part of creating a heaven here on earth, a place where, like in the story Tracy shared with us, where we nurture, where we feed each other, a place where education was available to all, where slavery did not taint the ideals of liberty, where conscience was free and unfettered, able to explore the light of truth wherever it shines. In 1830, William Ellery Channing further explicated the ideals in his sermon, Spiritual Freedom, saying, "I call that mind free, which jealously guards its intellectual rights and powers, which calls no man master, which does not content itself with a passive or hereditary faith, which opens itself to light whensoever it may come, which receives new truth as an angel from heaven, which, whilst consulting others, inquires still more of the oracle within itself, and uses instruction from abroad not to supersede, but to quicken and exalt its own energies. I call that mind free, which sets no bounds to its love, which is not imprisoned in self or in sect, which recognizes in all human beings the image of God and the rights of his children, which delights in virtue and sympathizes with the suffering wherever they are seen, which conquers pride, anger, and sloth, which offers itself up to the cause of humankind." Imagine that, that understanding of what religion could be nearly two centuries ago. In this prophetic voice, we hear a challenge for people to see beyond sectarian confines, a challenge that religion be open to all sources of wisdom, a challenge to the powers that be, that they be guided by love, by a concern for others rather than their own selfishness. Could any ideal of religion be more relevant today? Just as with those ideals expressed in the Good Samaritan, to be a good neighbor is based on one's actions, not one's positions or one's supposed values, but how one lives in relationship, how one lives in relationship to others. The good neighbor was not the one who proclaimed his righteousness. Instead, it turned out to be the outsider, the Samaritan, who through his actions demonstrated what it meant to be a good neighbor. He was the one who had mercy. Now, you see, this is the deep, dark secret of the Good Samaritan parable. It's the secret that those who we might see as the priests and Levites of today's world, the ones who attempt to shape a religion that lets people walk past those in need, that proclaims God endorses their greed and selfishness. This is the secret they don't want you to know. The Samaritan helped the man, not caring what that man believed, not caring where he was from, not caring about anything other than the fact that he was another human being who was in need. It is the failure of the religious narrative of today, the failure of it to matter in people's lives, that's causing younger people in our country to walk away from religion. The Pew Research Center's report from May of last year shows a continued increase of those who refer to themselves as unaffiliated. It's now the largest religiously measured demographic in our country. It increased over the last 7 years from 16% of the overall population to now over 23%. Now, that's in the overall population. Amongst younger people, that increase is even greater. More than a third of those who are called millennials, those born between 81 and 96, describe themselves as unaffiliated. Now, in the subsets of that group, the youngest subset, that number is nearly 40%. Yet this same cohort who does not affiliate with religious institutions shows a strong sense that their lives are shaped by their values. Their decisions on careers, on politics, on social engagement are driven by what was for many of them, their concern for the environment, their sense of being in relationship to the larger world, their embracing of diversity of all kinds, as well as their skepticism of authority. There is a strong sense of the importance of relationship that this group shows. These beliefs matter to them. Just as for many who have stayed in this tradition, who grew up in it, and those of us for whom it was a rock at a torrent stream at times in our life, Sophia Lyon Fah's words, you know, she was like one of the leading religious educators in the history of our movement. Her words that we share together resonate with the understanding that we share that our beliefs matter. In the story of our faith, both Channing and Fah's prophetically describe this idea of developing a religiosity that not only of these upcoming generations, but more and more people of all ages embrace. In the academic world, we refer to this as something called post-pluralism. Now, the ideal of pluralism was that we would all engage with other religious confessions, that we would seek to learn from each other and be open to dialogue, and in so doing, deepen our own sense of religion. Now, post-pluralism moves past that understanding in a different way to see the way in which we gather our religious narratives from all sorts of different sources. The old modernist understanding that you could only have one religious tradition that you claimed is quickly withering away as we see the impact of that light from all different sources influencing how we craft our religious lives. For myself, I cherish my Buddhist meditation and seek always to respect and appreciate and deeply understand the Native American traditions that I've studied and been witness to. And I have, over the years, found my way back to the Christian ethics I grew up in, expressed in my favorite parable of the Good Samaritan. I have the deepest respect for the power of the ideals of the five pillars of Islam. Now, all of these different lights of religious truth shine for me and help me to construct my own narrative. My UU faith communities have always supported this path and have been there to help me in my own explorations. And while this journey toward creating such a post-pluralistic tradition began in Channing's message about the free mind to become ensconced of part of our tradition. If you look at the cover pages in our hymnals, it has the lists of the traditions that inspire us. Now, this journey has not been without its complications. Just as the journey of democracy is often a messy one, so too is the idea of creating a radically different understanding of what it means to be religious been messy. But yet we choose to create a community that walks together, seeing our differences as strengths. This is another one of those secrets. This is how we human beings will live in the world. Knowing bone deep in those souls we should give away that we need not believe alike to love alike. That respect and compassion are more important to the ultimate welfare of our species and our fragile world than our orthodoxy and righteousness. At the same time, we are in the midst of a global backlash against these ideals of openness and diversity, these ideals that resonate so strongly with the story of our faith. Those groups, doesn't matter what their professed religious or political identities are, they see their authority waning and are reacting by inciting fear, by drawing those lines of exclusion, too often resorting to violence or threats of violence. As hard as it is to live through such times, I also think back to the time of Alexander Hamilton represented in the musical. His was an era when political disagreements led to duels. I don't think it's a spoiler to tell you that Aaron Burr shoots and kills Hamilton in the end. And during his second term, good old George Washington, who's at the top of every list of favorite presidents, there were calls for George Washington to be taken in the streets and guillotined and have his head chopped off. There were those who were inspired by the French Revolution, and they thought George Washington was too patrician to represent our republic. Now, the times we live in today are definitely volatile, and the next election, with the potential impact both in foreign policy and in the Supreme Court, could have a long-lasting impact on the course of our nation. Yet every generation of citizens in this nation has been through those volatile times, be it wars or dust bowls, economic disasters, threats foreign and domestic. And through all of these times, our religious tradition has continued to be a voice of prophecy and a voice of hope. Prophetic in the past, issuing a challenge to end slavery, for the right for women to vote, the reforming of prisons, of schools, standing shoulder to shoulder in the March for Civil Rights. And today, in the continued call for marriage equality, seeking to understand the relationship of race and violence that still plagues our nation, caring for the environment as a religious imperative, joining with other religious communities to organize, to create fairness in our own community, in healthcare and justice, and opportunities for all. With this theological imperative for justice comes the knowledge that this work is not easy. Our all-too-human attempts will, even with the best intention, sometimes fall short. And so we must have a community that accepts our humanity, that finds hope in that new day dawning. And then we must give voice to that hope, to create a community that cares for people, that supports one another in our journey, where we can hold each other in times of trial, celebrate in times of success, and never be afraid of the other. This is that next chapter in the story of our faith, that continuing engagement in the world to make these ideals a reality. While the story of Hamilton was enacted on stage, there was that often bleak look at the history of our country. And yet it was a reminder that the politics of the nation has been a bloody heartbreaking business. But on a deeper level, to see on Broadway a cast composed of every race and ethnicity of our nation, to see them there singing the words in every different style of music that we have conjured, and to hear those words from Latino playwright Lin-Manuel Miranda, the son of Puerto Ricans who moved their family to New York City, and hearing those words from the deep bass of a tall, black George Washington in the actor of Christopher Jackson. I couldn't help but realize how far we have come. But no, it's not far enough. And to continue the story of this country, it needs a religious tradition that developed with those ideals of freedom, the ideals of the freedom of conscience and of service to humanity and ultimate faith in hope. Thank you.